So, to understand Megillas Esther, you have to read a little bit of Ezra and a little bit of Daniel. So, if you really want to get a panoramic view of what's happening in Esther, you have to see what happened about 7 years earlier in Sefer Daniel, what happened a few years earlier in the beginning of Ezra, what happened a few years later. So, let's try to pose two questions, and through these questions, we'll highlight certain sections in Ezra and Daniel. So, question number one, we'll work backwards. Why were they so insistent that Haman's children be hung on a tree? It just seems very uncouth, very vulgar. You defeat your enemies. You don't want to parade around. You don't want to. These are kids. I don't know how old they were. They doesn't seem like they were co-conspirators with Haman. Why are they hanging Haman's children on a tree? So they understand that. You have to put Haman into perspective. And then they said, Haman into perspective. Let's talk a little bit about Parshas Zachar. Parshas Zachar, the Medrash says, when Amalek came and they attacked Am Yisrael in the desert, based on various psukim in Parshas Ki Tetzeh, they cut off their makam amila. And they threw it up to heaven, and they said, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, look at what you selected. Look at this nation that you selected, because the Bris Milah was iconic of our selection. Seems odd. There were some pirate group running through the desert, picking on vulnerable people, Shekar HaBaderach. Why would they care? Why would they disfigure and deform us? The answer is, it goes all the way back to Parshas. We don't really where it happened. The Medrash says that Timnah was Eliphaz's concubine, Pelegish. Timnah wanted to join the house of Avram. Avram spurned her. So Timnah said, you know what, I want to get in anywhere I can. So I'll get her on the wait list. So she decided to be the Pelegish of Eliphaz. And she took it very hard that Yaakov had usurped the Bechorah from Esav because she, you know, was rejected by Avram. So she felt spurned. Nothing worse than a spurned person. So on her deathbed, not called deathbed, but her death will to her stepson, who is Eliphaz's stepson, or her stepson, Eliphaz's son, Amalek, was, you have to be the one. You have to be the one to avenge the family. So Amalek's mission in life is, just make sure that Am Yisrael doesn't fulfill this Bechor that they wrongfully took from our family, or from our part of the family. So that's why Amalek rears its head, not just at arbitrary moments in Jewish history, but when the Jews are getting closer and closer to fulfilling their national destiny. So when they leave Mitzrayim, right now, this is the time. Because they were on the way to Eretz Yisrael. They were supposed to enter a few weeks after leaving Mitzrayim. We, of course, delayed it 40 years. So they have to intervene at this point. They must intervene at this moment because they have to prevent the Jewish people from entering Israel. That's why Agag, Battle of Shaul, when we first have Jewish dynasty. Shaul's the first king. Okay, they're in Eretz Yisrael, but if we can just prevent dynasty, they'll just be a band of local tribes rather than one confederate government. This is why Haman is involved, because this Purim miracle occurs in the 18-year gap between the original building of the Beis HaMikdash through Koresh and the suspension of that building and the subsequent conclusion through Ezra and Nehemiah. So Haman isn't just picking on the Jews. The Megillah presents it as if he's angry at Mordechai. His anger gets the best of him and he plans a genocide because one person hurt his feelings. There's a larger mission at play that Chazal fills us into. Now, what does this all have to do with B'nai Haman? Okay, so I put Haman into perspective. So you have to see that in Ezra. In Ezra Perek Dalid, okay, in Ezra Perek Dalid, the Jews have returned to Eretz Yisrael, and they're building the Heichal, and others offer to help them, and Ezra says, you know, we got this, we'll I say Zerubbabel, it's not yet Ezra, it's Ezra Perek Dalid, Zerubbabel is leading the mission, we got this, we'll build it, and they get so angry that the Jews are building, in part without them, that Uvimei it tarchashta. In the days of Itarchasha, we don't know who this king was, because that's a generic name for Persian kings. Kasav Bishlam, I'll read the pasuk in Hebrew, because there's a lot of Hebrew and Aramaic that interplay. And we talk about this tonight at 6 o'clock. It's an important share if you want to learn why it's important to speak Hebrew. But Uvimech Machus Achashverosh, Betchilas Machuso, during Achashverosh's reign, it's not clear whether it's Arachashverosh or a different king generically named Achashverosh, Kasvu Sitna, they wrote letters of hatred back to Persia. These people who were opposed, these locals who were opposed to Jewish expansionism, Al Yoshve Yehuda v'Yushalayim, well, the people of Yushalayim. Chazal say, who are the people that are writing letters? Joey Ismaili, who are these people? Chazal say they're B'nai Haman. If you look at the list, it sounds like Rechum Be'el Te'im, Shimshai Safra, but Chazal say that I think Rechaim, one of these Persian people, were really Haman. So Haman's kids, essentially, are in Yushalayim or in the environs years before Purim, riling up against the Jewish people, preventing the building of the Beis HaMikdash, basically asserting their Amalek role. These are the descendants of Amalek asserting their role. And then, a couple years later, their father says, you know what, instead of preventing the Beis HaMikdash, let's kill them. Or, to put it into modern terms, what seems to be anti-Zionism proves to be anti-Semitism. And we go, we're not opposed to the Jews, we just don't want them building the Beis HaMikdash in Yerushalayim. And then a couple years later, the same people, Haman and his children, are trying to kill the Jewish people. And because they're Amalek, they have to be. Again, this is the Amalek question. Because they're Amalek, they have to be killed. So the hanging of Bnei Haman reminds us that this entire story is not just some isolated person whose feelings were hurt, who planned the genocide, who... This is the entire Amalek story unfolding during a very, very critical point of Jewish history, namely when the Jews are about to return. They have returned. They built the Beis HaMikdash. Beis HaMikdash was suspended by Bnei Haman. Haman says, let me finish the job. And then 18 years later, or less than 18 years after Mordechai and Esther, Am Yisrael returns. For those that feel that Amalek is a concept, not just a genealogy, so it raises our thinking about the Holocaust. As Am Yisrael is getting closer and closer to Eretz Yisrael in the modern era and about to return to the end of history, so the forces of evil, not necessarily genealogical, Amalek raises its head. And that's why we've been discussing Pesichos this week. Chazal would introduce their study of Megillah Esther with a pasuk from Tanakh that would highlight a hidden theme of the Megillah. So when Rabbi Chanina Bar Ada taught Megillah Esther, he began with a pasuk in Koheles. Divrei pi Chacham Chayin. The Chacham has nice words to say from his mouth that Koreshu authorized the building of Beis HaMikdash. The end of Koheles is Techilas Divrei pi Usichlos, but the Sifzos Ksil Tavalenu, but the lips of the foolish person will swallow the Jewish people as Achashverosh. So at least according to Chazal, our Achashverosh from Megillah Esther was the one who banned the continuation of the building of the Beis HaMikdash. It's not just Bnei Haman, but Achashverosh was part of that sinister plot. Okay, one more pasuk and one more general explanation. Why was it the Talmidim of Shimon ben Lakish asked him, Shimon bar Yochai, why were the Jewish people punished in Persia and Shushan and Paras and Mandai? So he says, I don't know, you tell me. So what did they say? Because they partook of the meal of Achashverosh. What's so bad? The food was kosher, the Midrashim, the Vashtiyah Kadas Eidonas, Kidash Shaltara, everyone was eating kosher food. What was so horrible about it? So maybe it's not the most moral place to be for 180 days, a lot of orgiastic sexual debauchery and vomiting. We talked about this yesterday. But there's something deeper. And to understand that, let's go back to someone who didn't eat Persian food. Who didn't eat Persian food? He ate Babylonian food. Who was that? That was Daniel. In the beginning of Sefer Daniel, Jehoiachin is exiled 18 years before the final Golos of Tzidkiyahu, and Nebuchadnezzar has a plan. For me to absorb the Jewish people in public, because he didn't want to disturb the Jewish people, he wanted to acclimate them, let me take some yuppies, some up-and-coming young professionals, and let me take them into the palace, give them new names, and he takes Hananiah, renames him Mishael, renames him Azariah, renames him, and Daniel renames him, and let me acculturate them to Bavel, so that when these old Jews come to Eretz Yisrael, they'll be able to teach them the new ways of Bavel, this new culture. And he gives them food and wine. And the food and wine is kosher, it's not kosher. And Daniel says, I'm not eating this food. I'm making a stand. I'm not going to become acculturated. Because where you eat, not just the food is kosher, but what you eat and what name you take for yourself, that's Jewish identity. And without Jewish identity, religious identity will be unanchored. So he says, I have to protect my Jewish identity. If I start eating Babylonian food, I'll lose it and then everything will collapse. So he makes a stand. Because he makes a stand, what does he eat? Anyone know? He has some of the guards, smuggle in some seeds for him. Because seeds are easy to hide, and they're high in protein, or high in calories, caloric intake. He has some zeronim. And this is the original source of Hamantashim. This is what the Ramah says. The original source is not Haman's three-cornered hat or any of the original sources, because the original Hamantashim were poppy seeds. Those are the originals in the Haman. So we're eating on Purim to remember Daniel. Why are we eating on Purim to remember Daniel? Because Purim takes place 7 years later. And our final redemption and return to Eretz Yisrael would never have happened if Daniel hadn't made a stand 70 years earlier. Had he not preserved Jewish identity 70 years earlier, nothing has happened. And that's the contrast between Daniel, who doesn't want to eat Babylonian food, and all the Jews of Shushan, who are more than happy to spend 180 days eating Yayin Kadas Enones. And they see nothing wrong with eating the food. And that's why Chazal are always trying to fit Daniel into Megillah Esther. Hasach is Daniel. See, this one is Daniel. They're not really Daniel. Daniel's probably somewhere else. But we want to give like a cameo appearance, you know, for Daniel in some of the scenes, because we're trying to link what happens in Megillah Esther to what happens in, say, for Daniel 70 plus years earlier, because he took a stand and preserved Jewish identity by not eating kosher, but doesn't mean you can't eat American food. But there are larger forces at work that aren't just religious and ritual. How you define yourself, what your Jewish identity is, what your Jewish pride is. And Daniel is well aware that that's the baseline of religious identity and of redemption. Okay, so you have to really read Daniel and Ezra carefully to get the full experience of Megillas Esther. So take a little time when you get a chance, maybe not this year, try to make this literally hundreds of connections between Megillas Esther, textual connections, stylistic connections, thematic connections, personality connections. So take a little time, not all at once, because it's hard, especially Ezra, because it's written in Aramaic, as part of Daniel, but Daniel and Ezra, but try to see some of the Megillas Esther there. Okay? Welcome, welcome.
Thank
again.
You.
Welcome again.
Thanks.
You stay in the hotel?
Right here.
We call it the hotel.
The guest room.
The guest room.